Coming up on KUCB News, a GCI outage impacts emergency calling, and the Unalaska Raiders host home wrestling matches. Stay tuned.
Local news is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Zoe Sobel with some local news on Thursday, October 12, 2017. A GCI outage last week left Unalaskans unable to call the Department of Public Safety. The department sent out a text alert Friday afternoon to warn community members that they should try using landline phones if they were unable to connect with a cell phone. Dan Boyette is a vice president for GCI. He says any outage is unacceptable.
We work real hard to make sure that those systems don't fail, and we put redundant systems inside those shelters that are up there, and work as hard as we can to make sure that we don't have those kind of outages.
Nick Manglalon, also of GCI, says outages like last week's aren't that uncommon. It can happen anywhere and on any carrier.
You know, if this type of outage can happen in Anchorage, in Seattle, with any carrier. So it's not just due to the fact that you are in the Aleutians or in Unalaska or Dutch Harbor.
But the difference, Boyette says, is large cities have more cell towers, and that can help make up for gaps during outages. In Unalaska, that's not the case.
In a small town where you have a central cell site through which all the traffic goes, and there is no other cell site to pick up that traffic, you don't have that luxury.
Boyette says he hopes an outage like this won't happen again for a long time. By the end of the day last Friday, service was up and running as usual. Raiders Wrestling hosts home matches this weekend with athletes from Sandpoint and King Cove. Senior night kicks off the weekend tomorrow at 7 p.m. with wrestling starting at 7:30. There are also matches Saturday at 5 p.m. Admission is free. You can catch the matches at the high school. The EPA is backing away from the use of preemptive Clean Water Act restrictions against large-scale mining in the Bristol Bay watershed. That comes as part of a settlement with the Pebble Limited Partnership, and the company now says it is preparing to file for permits. EPA is taking public comment on its proposed withdrawal and is holding two meetings in Bristol Bay to hear from residents directly. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more from the meeting in Dillingham.
The EPA staff ran into the palpable disappointment of well over 100 residents Wednesday afternoon. Dozens testified over 3.5 hours. Most spoke from the heart about their love for the region and their existential fear of a large mine.
If we lose our fish, we're going to lose everything. My children and the children's children will never get a chance to do the things that I've done.
Without the strictest of protections like 404C, our way of life, our fish, our clean, pure water will be decimated.
There's a reason that we have all this fish. It's because we don't have any mines. We don't have any dams.
This withdrawal is a threat to me and my people and our very existence as a people of this land.
When are we going to say enough is enough and stop creating other potential risks or disasters to the dwindling wildernesses, lands and water that have provided for our people's existence for thousands of years?
It is your trust responsibility to continue to ensure that we will have clean water in Bristol Bay. I cannot feed my children copper or gold or anything that will come out of that mine.
That was David Nicholson, Diane Folsom, Albert Larson, Anushka Waisaki, Dagan Nelson, and Robin Cheney, all from Dillingham or neighboring villages. Bristol Bay's largest hub sits downstream of and more than 100 miles as the crow flies from one of the largest copper and gold deposits in North America. Dillingham is home to some of Pebble's most ardent opponents. All who spoke Wednesday, including Peter Christopher from New Stuyahok, called for their one-time ally EPA to reverse its current course.
I would appreciate if you guys would pass that on to Scott Pruitt to consider not withdrawing that Clean Water Act.
The agency staff on hand spoke at length about the Trump administration's approach and reminded their audience that the EPA had never finalized the preemptive restrictions and is in no way limited from still blocking Pebble under Section 404C of the Clean Water Act. But if that authority is used, it will now likely happen within the normal permitting process after an environmental impact statement has been completed. Dan Dunaway from Dillingham told the EPA he's not sure the Obama administration was following a just course, but he doesn't necessarily like the alternative either.
I get a sense that the process for mining permits, there's not really a clear avenue to get to no mine versus a mine. I think the process for mining permits in that way is somewhat flawed.
The Pebble deposit is located on state lands set aside for mineral development. Sensing the state was ill-equipped to protect the ecosystem and downstream fishery, Bristol Bay tribes asked for federal intervention back in 2010. That triggered the EPA's Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment, which led to the proposed mining restrictions. This was an outcome Catherine Karskalin, a commercial fisherman from Dillingham, wants to see upheld.
Our state permitting process is not equipped to consider the long-term impact of not only Pebble's Phase 1 plan, which is what I consider it, but the domino effect of the mining district this would bring. That's why 404C allows for a proactive decision, and there's no better place to apply this from Bristol Bay.
House Speaker Bryce Edgman, who hails from Dillingham and represents the region, blasted the EPA for backing down and also agreed that Alaska doesn't do enough to protect its salmon habitat.
It's been the history of our state that all major development projects get the benefit of the doubt. That's just been a fact of life in Alaska. It's time to change that now. EPA can play a large role in that. Please don't defy the wishes of the region, the people of the great state of Alaska, and our country as a whole. Thank you.
Those who lined up to speak to EPA Wednesday have done so many times for the past 7 years. They felt they had won the battle under Obama, but with one election, that rug was pulled out from under them. With a catchy new zinger, Robin Samuelson told EPA again and probably not for the last time that the world's greatest sockeye salmon fishery and its intact ecosystem deserve unique protection.
My people here rely on this resource and be damned if we're going to see that mine happen. And you guys better stay the Environmental Protection Agency, not empty promises to America.
EPA headed next to Iliamna to hear from residents much closer to the proposed mine site. The public comment period closes October 17th. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
In the ongoing effort to curb overdose deaths from opioids like heroin, police across Alaska are getting trained to use a new tool. Naloxone, a medication that rapidly reverses the effects of an opioid overdose, has long been used by emergency medics, but now it's being deployed to police departments and nonprofits at the front line of the state's opioid crisis. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, even with millions of new federal dollars being spent, the demand is outpacing the supply.
A room full of police listen as Lieutenant Steve Adams shows them how to use Narcan, a brand of naloxone that comes in a small bottle you could fit inside of a purse or a jacket pocket. Adams shows how to properly use the nasal spray if somebody's overdosing.
So the signs of an overdose include their face is going to be clammy to the touch, the body's going to be limp, fingernails and lips turn blue.
Adams works on drug enforcement with the state troopers, but his audience today is from a patchwork of agencies. The training is part of a push to get more doses of naloxone to people who are often the first ones to find somebody overdosing.
So what do? Turn them on their back, tilt their head back, support the neck with the hand, insert the tip into their nostril. Doesn't matter, left or right, it's gonna get there. Press it, make sure it's all out, and call 911. And then roll them over into this rescue position.
Naloxone blocks opioid receptors in the brain and almost immediately counteracts an OD, although it may take several doses. There are almost no negative side effects, even if it's given to somebody by accident who isn't actually on opioids. The medication has been around since the 60s and widely used by medical professionals. But now, public health and addiction recovery advocates want to make it as common as defibrillators or EpiPens. That is, a simple medical intervention the public knows how to use. And Adams says state troopers are in a perfect position to help give the mandatory 15-minute trainings to dispense Narcan in communities across Alaska.
Our goal is to provide it to every Alaska state trooper and to provide it to every other agency, federal, state, and local, who would like to have it.
One of those agencies is the police and fire department at the Ted Stevens International Airport. Sergeant Daniel Juarez says at least once a month, officers will find somebody who's overdosed on a nearby roadway or in a terminal bathroom before a flight.
Well, a lot of times we're going to be there usually before paramedics. And, you know, the sooner that we can administer possibly a life-saving treatment, you know, we'd like to do that. And that's just another tool for us.
The governor's disaster declaration on the opioid crisis, along with a legislative bill last year, have increased access to the medication. Nonprofits like My House and Wasilla distribute Narcan kits. The Alaska AIDS Assistance Association, which runs the state's largest needle exchange, has given out hundreds of them and routinely requests more. Even nurses and security guards from the Anchorage School District were recently trained. Narcan isn't cheap. Over the counter at a pharmacy, it costs about $150 for a two-dose pack. But the state buys that same amount for half the price, using federal money from the Department of Health and Human Services through a $4.2 million grant. The kits are given out to individuals for free. Andy Jones helps administer the grant. He says the state originally aimed to distribute 5,000 Narcan kits this year.
Since February 15th, we have distributed 6,300 kits, and the pace continues to get faster and faster because more and more overdose response programs and communities are coming online.
Gathering the data is difficult. Jones says so far they've counted at least 39 saves, but those figures depend on medics, police, or volunteers submitting a form that says they used Narcan. Jones admits there are likely a lot of people administering the medication and not generating a record. In 2016, an estimated 88 Alaskans died from an opioid overdose. In the state's largest city, paramedics with the Anchorage Fire Department remain one of the main bulwarks against overdoses. According to figures from AFD, since the start of the year, they've used naloxone an average of 35 times a month, more than once a day. But they can't access the same federal grant as the state and use their budget to pay for the increasingly used medication. AFD Assistant Chief Eric Schuneman says last year the department spent just over $14,000 on naloxone. This year, they'd almost hit that amount by the end of the summer. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Airport security screening rules for carry-on bags are changing again. Soon, any electronics larger than a cell phone must be put in bins with nothing on top or beneath it for X-ray screening. That's already the status quo for laptops. The Transportation Security Administration says the change will raise baseline aviation security. It will be implemented at airports in Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan, Wrangell, Cordova, and Yakutat over the next 5 weeks. The rollout is nationwide, but gradual as training is completed in different places. TSA spokeswoman Lori Dankers acknowledges that there will be inconsistencies even within Alaska between Anchorage and Southeast airports during the transition. The TSA advises Southeast travelers arrive 90 minutes early for flights. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Zoe Sobel. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. Please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecast.